Today on the Political Theory of Everything, I will be giving you your daily dose of news for today's date, Wednesday, November 24th. And this time we're going to be doing the other two sources for the eight articles, this one being CNN and the Daily Wire. Obviously, you can guess CNN is the left-leaning one and the Daily Wire is the right-leaning one. These two are basically as polar as you can get. I guess CNN and Fox News, but Daily Wire and CNN for today. So let's get started. To start off our news from CNN, the title of this one, China is joining the U.S. and other countries in tapping emergency oil reserves. China confirmed on Wednesday that it would join the United States and other major energy-consuming nations in releasing strategic oil reserves to try cool high prices. And tame inflation. The White House announced Tuesday that the United States would release about 50 million barrels from its strategic petroleum reserve and that China, Japan, India, South Korea, and the United Kingdom would participate in the coordinated move. According to the International Energy Agency, which monitors global oil supplies on behalf of the world's leading economies, there have been three coordinated stock releases since the agency was founded. Before the Gulf War in 1991, after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita damaged oil facilities in the Gulf of Mexico in 2005, and in response to the supply disruption caused by the war in Libya in 2011. In China, it will release the estimated combined capacity of 37.7 million tons from its nine major reserve bases around the country, but China doesn't really post a lot of data about their reserves. We move on. There's a few other countries, but let's just get to the important one. The United States would release about 50 million barrels from its strategic petroleum reserve. So we'll see. Apparently these 50 million barrels actually only last about 2.5 days. So how much help is this really doing? Not much. So they're trying to lower the prices. And that's where the Biden administration is looking at shutting down a second pipeline. So they're trying to lower the prices right now. But then long term, they're not, as they are looking to shut down a second pipeline. Maybe that's changed. But as of now, that is the idea, is for them to shut down another pipeline, which would only increase a massive amount the gas prices that we're dealing with right now. In my area, a year ago, you could have gotten it for less than $2. And now it's about $3.30, probably on average, $3.30. Yeah, probably a good average right around there. So a massive increase just there. So we saw the XL pipeline. We stepped out of it, which Canada was not very enthused about. And then also Mexico. And then now we are considering a second pipeline. So we really are just putting together a great setup for a massive increase for gas prices, which for me, it's only $3.30 only. When for people in California and states like that, it'll be a massive increase, probably to like a $5 average at least. So we'll see what happens with that. But until then, we move on to the next article. Once again, CNN. And a change. You know, CNN and the left were trying to push that this inflation is temporary, it's not permanent. Listen to the title here. Inflation isn't going away. Here's how to make money from it. Interesting. Nobody in their right mind likes to pay higher prices for stuff. But if you're an investor, there is a way to profit from inflationary trends, and it might be time to start adjusting your portfolio accordingly. Consumer staples giants like Coca-Cola and Pepsi can benefit from raising prices, as long as they are able to pass on some of those costs to customers, and that's what some companies are doing. Which, right there, if you listen to that, those higher prices, they push the costs onto customers. That's the exact same thing that would happen with taxes. But for some reason, they imagine that it won't. You know, they have higher costs, higher payments that they have to make for taxes. And they say, no, it won't get pushed onto the customer. But then here, they're talking about just inflation having higher prices and higher costs for the company, and the company pushing that onto their customers. But here, that's okay to say. But when it comes to taxes, you can't say that. And that's what's happening here in this article. You can see that they say rising prices, as long as they were to pass on some of those costs to the customers. And that's what some companies are doing. So just see that inconsistency in their logic right there. J.M. Smucker, which makes a wide range of products including Jif peanut butter and Folgers coffee, has been raising prices, for example, and that has not appeared to hurt demand or the stock. Shares of Smucker rose more than 5% Tuesday after the company reported earnings and sales that topped forecasts. Because of the price increases. Smucker Chief Financial Officer Tucker Marshall noted during a conference call that the company has been able to offset increased costs for coffee and transportation with higher prices. Look at that. So you're telling me if you increased a corporation's taxes, which increases their cost, for some reason when that happens, you wouldn't push it on to the customers. It doesn't work logically. It doesn't. It's very fallible. Even some retailers are finding they can raise prices to offset higher costs and not alienate customers in the process. Apparel company Guess, which reported strong earnings and sales Tuesday afternoon, said it's managing rising cotton prices by cutting down on discounts in its stores. Guess shares surged nearly 15% Wednesday on the news. It just talks about other companies that are basically doing the same. And they're saying that because of inflation, the stock market prices will go up slightly because the companies are now making more because they're making costs higher. But I think the main thing, as I've already reiterated twice, that I want you to get out of this is the inconsistency between their tax ideas and the inflation ideas. If inflation, they raise their prices because the company has to pay more to get those products and to sell them. It costs more for the products, and then they push that onto their customer because they're not going to lose money. They're going to want to make more money. Why would it be any different with taxes? And the point is, it wouldn't be any different. If you force taxes upon corporations, they would do the exact same thing as if you force inflation upon them. Or not force inflation. If inflation happened to them, it's the same thing with taxes. If their cost goes up, they will push that onto the customer. And that's what we see here, and that's what we would see with increased taxes on corporations. It doesn't work. That's why the middle class always ends up paying for it. Here we have another from CNN. Samsung will create 2,000 jobs in Texas with $17 billion chip factory. Samsung is planning to build a $17 billion semiconductor manufacturing facility in Texas as part of its efforts to tackle a global shortage of chips. Announcing its largest ever investment in the United States, the South Korean electronics giant said Tuesday that the factory would create 2,000 high-tech jobs directly and thousands more in the local economy once it's fully in operation. The facility is expected to begin operations in the second half of 2024. The company said it chose the city of Taylor in Texas for its new plant based on multiple factors, including its proximity to Samsung's current manufacturing site in Austin, the local semiconductor ecosystem, and government support. The Taylor site will span more than 5 million square meters and is expected to serve as a key location for Samsung's global semiconductor manufacturing capacity, along with its latest new production line in Pyeongtaek, South Korea. I really hope I said that right. Samsung's announcement comes at a time when the Biden administration has been pushing semiconductor production and research in the United States. Although the current worldwide shortage of computer chips is primarily driven by the fact of the pandemic, extreme weather events that have hampered production and other factors, the United States has been lagging behind other producers for years. Its share of worldwide semiconductor manufacturing dropped to just 12%, last year, according to the Semiconductor Industry Association. That's down from 37% in 1990. The trade group blamed, quote, substantial, end quote, subsidies offered by foreign governments that place the United States at a, quote, competitive disadvantage, end quote. So the main part of this article is, one, it's always good to see jobs popping up. And then two, you can see the interest now. I wonder why they would go into America specifically. Maybe it's cheaper here to do it somehow. I don't know if the government's trying to make it more intriguing to come to America to make these. But I guess that's a double win: jobs, and now America is able to push up their chip factory and chip creation that we've been, as you can see, lagging behind comparatively to other countries. Now we're going to move into two articles, CNN, Daily Wire, doing the same thing. We're going to do the same topic and see the difference in approach with the exact same topic. And for CNN and Daily Wire, you can see the difference just in the titles. So I guess we'll get started with that. I'll try to go back and forth like I did before, but here we go with the first article from CNN. So the title for CNN This is your. I'm going to actually read this, the two titles first. Title for CNN: The Three White Men Were Convicted in the 2020 Death of Black Jogger Ahmaud Arbery. So, the three white men. So, it's very, very categorical. They're trying to show you that it's white people who did this, which is why this case was so provocative. And then we go to Daily Wire, and their title: Breaking. Father and son found guilty of murder of Ahmaud Arbery. So that's where you see how CNN highlights the color. They say the three white men who killed black jogger Ahmaud Arbery versus Daily Wire, who just says father and son found guilty of murder of Ahmaud Arbery. So they tend to leave out the racial part because, you can't get rid of racism by bringing race into everything. And so, whether this was a racist killing or not, that's not the point. I'm just saying as a whole, you can't get rid of racism when you bring race into everything. And so here you go, CNN. They just have a bunch of, they have 29 posts because they're doing this live update thing. So they have a bunch of speeches that, you know, they, like the one from the lead prosecutor and all these other, Reverend Al Sharpton. We're just going to skip all of those. And they basically, it talked about how the jury weighed both charges of malice murder and felony murder. And it talks about why those are different. Ahmaud Arbery's mom says he can now rest in peace. Observers raise fists as Arbery family and lawyers walk out of courthouse holding hands. Judge asks Ahmaud Arbery's father to leave the courtroom after he cheers guilty verdict. So I guess I'll read that one. That's interesting. Judge Timothy Walmsley asked Marcus Arbery Sr., the father of Ahmaud Arbery, to leave the courtroom after he reacted to the guilty verdict of Travis McMichael, the man who shot his son. Arbery exclaimed, quote, woohoo, end quote, after the first guilty verdict was read. Quote, I ask that whoever just made an outburst to be removed from the court, please, end quote, Walmsley said. Continuing on with his quote, if you feel like you need to make a comment regarding the verdict, I ask that you step outside the courtroom now. And then moving on, sentencing date for three men convicted of murder in Ahmaud Arbery's death has not been set. So we do not know when the sentencing will be quite yet. I'm sure we'll find out very shortly. It talks about outside the courthouse, how people gathered after the jury found all three men guilty. The jury deliberated for more than 11 hours. CNN's Sarah Sidner said most of the people who had been waiting outside the whole time the jury was deliberating, some have been outside the courthouse for the entire 2 weeks the trial was going on. They have been chanting Arbery's name, saying, quote, we've got justice, end quote. Some people are waving flags. There were screams of relief and yelling when the verdict was read, Sidner reported. There's a breakdown of the verdict. So for Travis McMichael, the jury found him guilty of malice murder, four counts of felony murder, two counts of aggravated assault, and one count of false imprisonment, and one count of criminal attempt to commit a felony. Travis's father, Gregory McMichael, was found guilty of four counts of felony murder, two counts of aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and criminal attempt to commit a felony. And then there's William Roddy Bryan Jr. was found guilty of three counts of felony murder, one count of aggravated assault, one count of false imprisonment, and one count of criminal attempt to commit a felony. So that's what they were all found guilty on. Jury concluded that a fellow human was being, quote, hunted down, according to a CNN analyst. So that's basically all that there is. They opened it up. Nearly all white Arbery murder trial jury consisted of nine women and three men. So there is that. I don't know why race and color matter. It's the judicial system. If I was in a jury and it's white people, like, I wouldn't naturally just automatically lean to them being innocent. You just listen to the facts, and that's how it is. So on to Daily Wire and their version of the story. I'm sure it'll be relatively similar because most of it is just like, this is what happened. But the way that they lay it out and word it will be different because they'll most likely Daily Wire will try to leave out the idea of race. They might bring it in and say, this is why it was so provocative. But they will mostly leave out the idea of race. So here we go. The jury in the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial reached a verdict on Wednesday afternoon, finding Gregory McMichael and Travis McMichael guilty of felony third murder. A third defendant, William Roddy Bryan, was found not guilty on one account of felony murder, but guilty on all on other accounts of felony murder. Gregory Michael, who is 65, Travis McMichael, who are 35, are father and son, and William Roddy Bryan, a 52-year-old neighbor, were found guilty of various charges. In addition to felony murder, Travis McMichael was also found guilty of malice murder, aggravated assault, and false imprisonment. Gregory McMichael was found not guilty of malice murder, but guilty of felony murder, aggravated assault, and false imprisonment. Bryan was also found guilty of one account of aggravated assault as well as false imprisonment. So basically, malice murder means you have the intent, you intend to kill someone, and then felony murder means that they intentionally committed the felon. So, I don't know, felony, I mean. So, yeah, that's just for context here as I read out some of the article. Lawyers for the McMichaels argued in court that they were pursuing a man they believed to be a burglary suspect so that they could perform a citizen's arrest. A lawyer for Bryan argued that Bryan merely recorded the incident and his presence was entirely irrelevant to Arbery's death. He was armed with a cell phone, his attorney told the court. According to USA Today, Arbery's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones, cried in the hallway of the courthouse after the verdict, saying, quote, "We finally got justice," end quote. Ben Crump, an attorney for the Arbery family, responded to the verdict on social media, saying, "Nothing will bring back Ahmaud, but his family will have some peace knowing the men who killed him will remain behind bars. He can never inflict their brand of evil on another innocent soul." The three men will be sentenced at a later date, and each faces up to a maximum of life in prison. Although Ahmaud Arbery was killed in February of 2020, the case drew national attention months later after a video of the fatal encounter was leaked to a local media station by an attorney with informal connection to Bryan in an attempt to set the record straight. The video showed Arbery running down the street in the direction of a white pickup truck, where Gregory McMichael and Travis McMichael can be seen armed and waiting for Arbery. The duo agreed that they believed he was a suspect in a recent string of burglaries in the neighborhood. When Arbery approaches the truck, he goes around to the passenger sides, and a struggle breaks out between him and Travis Michael, who was holding a shotgun. Arbery is fatally shot in the encounter. Arbery's mother said she believed her son was jogging at the time. He was pursued during closing arguments at a trial. Prosecutor Linda Dunikowski argued that the McMichaels, quote, "made the decision to attack Ahmaud Arbery in their driveways because he was a black man running down the street," end quote. In response to the case, Georgia repealed its citizen's arrest law. During the trial, Travis McMichael took the stand to explain his actions, saying he wanted to give, quote, "my side of the story," end quote. The younger McMichael recalled seeing Arbery in the neighborhood a couple of weeks before the shooting at night and said the man tried to hide from him. Quote, "he comes out and pulls up his shirt and goes to reach in his pocket or waistband area. It freaked me out," end quote. Hours before the verdict was reached, the jury asked the court to replay the video of the fatal encounter as well as the 911 call made by Gregory McMichael before the shooting. Most of the 911 call was filled with silence, although at the beginning of it, the elder McMichael could be heard shouting his son's name. Travis also made a 911 call moments earlier. When recalling the shooting at the trial, Travis McMichael said he shot Arbery because he, quote, "had my gun," end quote. The verdict brings an end to only one chapter of the case, which was tossed around from prosecutor to prosecutor due to conflicts of interest, pressure from Arbery's mother, and its growing size. Jackie Johnson, the first prosecutor on the case, was indicted in September for violating her oath of office and obstructing a law enforcement officer. According to the indictment, she also showed, quote, "favor and affection," end quote, to Gregory McMichael, who previously worked in her office, reporting, according to the New York Times. Although Johnson recused herself from the case within days of receiving it, before doing so, she sought advice about the case from George Barnhill, who would later become the second prosecutor. Barnhill, whose son worked in Johnson's office, would later recuse himself at the request of Arbery's mother, but not before telling the police department in a letter in early April that there was, quote, "insufficient probable cause to issue arrest warrants at this time," end quote. The McMichaels were arrested the following month within 36 hours of the Georgia Bureau of Investigations taking over the case file, as the Daily Wire previously reported. Johnson faces up to 5 years for violating her oath of office and 12 months for obstructing and hindering a law enforcement officer. According to CNN, the former charge is a felony, while the latter is a misdemeanor. So a lot of information from the Daily Wire, not just about like the verdict specifically, but even about previous to the verdict and even previous to the trial leading up to it, the prosecutors and all that, and the issues surrounding this trial, and just how weird, almost you could say, of a trial it was. It was an interesting trial, not to say that it was wrong or that it was corrupt or anything. It was just different. It was just weird. And so there is the difference between CNN's and Daily Wire. I'd say the main thing is CNN more goes for people's reactions to the case, like, oh, this person and this say this about this case, and this is what they say. This is like, it's a lot more opinionated versus Daily Wire, who just is like, this is what happened throughout the case. Which is just the difference in approach. One, it also could be a different stylistic for writers. I mean, it's not automatically to say, you know, one is right or wrong, but it's partially what they're trying to push across is they want to reach emotion. CNN mostly, they are more of a, they're trying to appeal to emotion, while Daily Wire in this case is trying to appeal to logic. Meaning they're just saying, like, Daily Wire is just trying to show you this is what happens in the case, boom 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 timeline, and while CNN is more so talking like emotion, like, oh, this is what was felt, this is what the group outside felt, group inside felt, this is what some of the prosecution felt or whatever, you know. It's just like it's more of a appeal to emotion than it is an appeal to logic. And we move on to the next article from Daily Wire, which the next three will be. Okay, whew, this has been quite a lot of talking. Daily Wire title: Enes Kanter slams professional sports leagues for not speaking out on China. Quote: They're scared. End quote. The Boston Celtics' Enes Kanter slammed professional sports leagues and other high-profile individuals during a Fox News interview on Tuesday for refusing to speak out about the atrocities taking place inside of communist China, saying that they are, quote, scared, end quote, and they only care about the money. Kanter was interviewed by Martha McCallum over a piece that he had published in the Wall Street Journal and a tweet that accompanied it, where he weighed in on a high-profile Chinese tennis player that has gone missing at times since speaking out about an alleged sexual assault perpetrated by a high-ranking Chinese official. When asked by McCallum, he felt like he was alone in his constant speaking out against China, Kanter said. Quote, I mean, someone had to do it, end quote. He continues on to say, you know, you see, there's so many athletes, so many actors, so many singers and rappers out there. They're scared. They're scared to say a word because they care too much about their money. They care too much about the endorsement deals. They care too much about what the teams that they play for are going to say, but you know, they should know one thing. It should be morals and principles over money. It shouldn't be the opposite way, end quote. Kanter also spoke out against the genocide that China is committing in Xinjiang, Xinjiang? I don't know if I'm saying it right, I'm sorry. Against religious minorities and China's other tyrannical actions, saying that the communist nation does not represent the Olympics' core values. Quote, they are a brutal dictatorship and they engage in censorship, they threaten the freedoms, and they don't respect humans' rights, and they hide the truth. And while we speaking right now, Martha, there's a genocide happening. There are millions of people in concentration camps. They're getting tortured and they're getting gang raped every day, end quote. Kanter said that, quote, organizations like NBA, NFL, NHL, MLS, and MLB, end quote, should take note of how the Women's Tennis Association is standing up to China because, quote, people's lives is way more important than the business side of it, end quote. He also just said that he believes that we should hold the organizations accountable for their lack of action. This has been a huge thing, as you saw back with the NBA when you couldn't speak about China at all, or what was happening in China. And that's where there's some quotes from even people like President Biden, where he just said the president of China will do what he has to do to, you know, keep his culture. And that was in response to the Uyghurs. And you're just like, what? What do you like? Oh, yeah, you know, he's got to put them in concentration camps, you know, to keep his country together, is basically what he said. And whether intentionally or not, that's what he ended up saying. And I think 6 million Uyghurs are in those concentration camps right now. I mean, it's almost, it is a very horrific thing that's happening. That was the big reaction with Mulan, when they made that movie. It was in the same province or whatever they call them of China as the Uyghur concentration camps. So here's a continuation of it from Enes Kanter, can ooh gee sorry Kanter, who has been wearing special shoes with messages on them, previous in basketball games, but now officially in an interview. So we have another article. Title, new poll, 77% of Americans say inflation is impacting their lives, majority blame Biden. According to a new poll by Yahoo News and YouGov, a vast majority of Americans say inflation is affecting their lives. As reported by Yahoo News on Tuesday, more than three-quarters of Americans, 77%, say inflation is affecting their lives as the holiday season begins. And according to a new Yahoo News poll, and a clear 57% blame President Biden. The outlet further reported that nearly 8 in 10 Americans who say inflation is affecting them, 37% said a great deal, 40% said some, more than 6 in 10 say the same about shortages of goods and services, 17% say a great deal for food and for goods and services, and 44% said some. A majority of Americans, 51%, also say they are worried, quote, they won't be able to afford what they need during the holidays due to inflation, end quote, while 45% say they're worried they won't be able to get what they need due to shortages. It continues on. Inflation has continued to impact Americans, and many appear to be concerned about it as the holiday season gets closer. As Americans typically plan to spend more money over the holidays, this year will likely be a year when their dollar doesn't go as far as they expected. As reported by the Daily Wire, brands are even starting to feel the impact and respond to it. Quote, next year, General Mills will raise prices on hundreds of products, end quote, the Daily Wire reported on Wednesday. The inflation rate for customers reached 6.2% in the United States during the month of October, and food companies such as General Mills are passing their higher input costs onto customers. Also from the Daily Wire, and also I've mentioned this all these numbers to you previously on the show, all the inflation numbers and how they've gone up basically 5% since President Joe Biden has been in office. So we will see what happens. Because this is now coming upon us now. It was mentioned in a previous article that I just read, but the fact that inflation is not going to change anytime soon, especially if these bills keep going through. If the Build Back Better bill goes through, it's going to absolutely skyrocket because we're spending money that we don't have as a United States government. And they look at it and they just spend money on each other for the majority of it, which is the most angering part. Like an infrastructure bill, like 2% of it goes to infrastructure and the rest of them are paying each other off so that they can all agree to pass this bill so they can all get each other's money. And so it's quite angering as Nancy Pelosi, I think, got like $630 million or something like that because her area was in debt. I don't even remember, but it's just things like that, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or not. It could be a Republican. It doesn't matter. If they're getting money from these quote-unquote infrastructure bills, it's quite unfortunate because bills used to be, you know, normal size things. They weren't these massive thousands of pages, giant stacks bills. They were normal length, normal size, and unfortunately, it's not how it works anymore. So we move on to the last article, and this is an opinion article from the Daily Wire. We never really do opinion articles, so I was like, eh, why not for the last one? And it's a very heated topic now, so I was like, eh, let's just see. DailyWire.com. Title, The Five Lies of CRT. It is by Mike Gonzalez. Progressives have reacted with outrage and no small amount of panic to the swiftness with which the anti-critical race theory movement has gained ideological and now political traction. In their rear guard action, they have employed at least five lies, which now require unmasking. What follows is a non-exhaustive attempt to do just that. Number one, CRT is not taught in schools. This one is most often heard, the most superficial and the easiest to dispel. Indeed, the smartest of the progressives, such as Rui Teixeira, have begun advising their ranks to abandon this clearly failed blunder. Still, the Joy Reads of this world outnumber the Teixeiras, so it's worth taking a crack at this first. Of course, long, turgid texts by Derek Bell, Kimberly Crenshaw, or any other CRT apologists are not being assigned to third graders. To do would probably constitute child abuse and violate several UN guidelines, but what matters in CRT is the praxis, the application of the discipline to real life in order to transform it, and this is certainly being done. Though CRT praxis was already in evidence in K-12 prior to 2020, the spasmodic disruption of American society by the Black Lives Matter organization last year has made CRT explode. Such implementation of CRT violates the law, especially the Civil Rights Act and the Constitution, which prohibits, respectively, treating students differently because of their race or national origin, and government's unequal treatment of Americans because of their race. Number two, CRT is just a way to give previously marginalized people the attention they've lacked. This is probably the most pernicious of the lies. We heard it most recently from the lips of Brian Stelter, who probably was not being pernicious in intent, just repeating something that he had heard. This particular lie is based on CRT, a notion that physical reality may be apprehended through the five senses, but is comprehended through the conceptual superstructure that orders our thinking. In the race variant of CT, that is critical race theory, that superstructure is, quote, white supremacy, end quote, which in the words of CRT scholar Richard Delgado is embedded in, quote, the ordinary business of society, end quote. The conceptual superstructure is Eurocentric and wrongly universalizes a male cisgender white view of the world. It therefore must be problematized, aka destroyed. CRT, however, is not the least bit interested in bringing minority voices to the forefront of debate. Witness the caustic, overly dramatic language that Bell himself used when George H.W. Bush appointed Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court, or that matter, the cruel buffoonery of Michael Eric Dyson in his treatment of the lieutenant governor-elect of Virginia, Winsome Sears, who is an African-American. CRT is only interested in promoting leftist voices that will help overthrow what they see as America's cultural hegemony with their preferred counter-hegemony, which is Marxist. What obtains, then, is the monolithic progressive thinking that we see now on display in the media, the academy, entertainment, and now the White House. None of CRT's policy approaches would in the least help people of any race or national origin. Third lie, CRT is not Marxist. This is a lie spread by those who know it to be a lie and then repeated by the gullible. All of the CRT firmaments know itself as being Marxist, an affirmation made by Angela Harris, Delgado, and others. Critical race theory came straight out of critical legal theory, sometimes known as critical legal studies, which came out of the critical theory of the Frankfurt School, which was one of the first and most important in the Western Marxist schools, and which replaced Karl Marx's economic determinism with the view that the cultural superstructure or hegemony was what dictated the actions or non-actions of the workers, not material relations. Number four, those opposed to critical race theory don't want history taught. Here we have a bold-faced lie. It is not true of anyone in the space that I inhabit. I have never heard Chris Rufo, James Lindsay, Lindsay Burke, Jonathan Butcher, Jay Green, Nicole Neely, Max Eden, or anyone else with whom I have collaborated express a sentiment even close to this. We all want American history taught, warts and all. Do we want children to be told the lies of the 1619 Project, for example, that the colonists rebelled because they feared Britain would end slavery? No, because that came from the pen of a fabulist. Nobody in their right mind would want their children to be taught that 2 plus 2 equals 5 either, which is an idea that's coming out, I've mentioned way earlier on this podcast, in Oregon. They do not want math to be focused on getting the right answer, and that a focus on getting the right answer inside of the classroom is a white supremacist idea. So that is what he is pointing at there, that nobody wants their kid to be taught that, because frankly, there is a correct answer in math. 2 plus 2 equals 4. And it's not white supremacy to say that. It is just math. And so, as an engineer, unfortunately, if we don't have engineers thinking that 2 plus 2 equals 4, then we are screwed as a society, and our infrastructure will simply collapse. Number five, the use of CRT is a cynical ploy by Republicans. This falsehood is repeated sometimes by even people who believe there is a problem with what schools are teaching, but who hold also that CRT has been wrongly used by the anti-CRT movement. What we in this movement label CRT is CRT. Far from a cynical ploy, we can say that what is being waged at the moment is a battle royale for the soul of America, if not the West itself. What the purveyors of CRT want to do is replace what they regard as the American hegemonic narrative of white supremacy with their counter-narrative, which is Marxist. That is part of a long-term strategy first conceived by Gramsci to infiltrate cultural institutions and destroy society's conceptual framework. Last year's mayhem facilitated their bid to usurp power. The anti-CRT pushback is just a matter of the American people confronting this strategy and saying no. Then there are the lies told by folks propagating CRT, and their useful idiots don't fall for them. Well, there you go. Mike Gonzalez is a senior fellow with the Heritage Foundation and is an author of, quote, BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution, end quote. That's not a quote, I meant to say the title of title, BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution. So, since that was 100% his opinion, I definitely want to make sure that he gets the credit, as I just read off of that. But there you go with CRT, a highly debated topic nowadays, especially inside of schools where it is being it's being debated whether it should get taught or it's already being taught. As we saw, Loudoun County paid a consultant to teach teachers a bunch about critical race theory. So it's starting to infiltrate the classroom. And that's where we also see, in relation to classrooms, the main reason McAuliffe lost in Virginia was because he said, "I don't think parents should have control over the classrooms." And that's a direct quote that he said, or that's, I might have maybe gotten a few words off, but he basically said parents should not be in the classroom. And that's what he said, and that's pretty much when he lost the race. And we can see that from the people's, quote-unquote, the People's Republic for China, for China, and the idea that they are a republic when in actuality they're communist. And their first move was taking parents out of the classroom and indoctrinating kids in the class. And so, and that was an attempted first move right here. Luckily, we're in America, and that didn't work so well. That didn't go across so well. And Virginia disliked it so much that they went red. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, it's a communist takeover. I'm just saying, like, that's what people think about when they hear that type of stuff. They go, ooh, even if it's not, I don't want to even risk that. I don't even want to approach that line. And they say no. And they say, I disagree with that so much. I'm going to go vote for this other person, which I disagree with, but I don't disagree with as much. I might not like as much as I usually would the other side, which for like a Democrat, they usually wouldn't like Youngkin that much. But they said, you know what? This guy is not very extreme right, which we see. He, as of now, he's not going to repeal mask mandates. He's not going to be like DeSantis and force mask mandates as a no and vaccine mandates as a no. So we'll see what he actually ends up doing once he's in office. But as of now, it seems as though he's going to try to be moderate. He's going to recognize that he didn't win with all the reds coming out, but he also won because blues voted him in. And so we're going to see what happens with Virginia. New Jersey had that one senator switch. And so we'll have that with the truck driver who beat a Democrat by spending a minimal amount of money. And we'll see what happens in 2022. And if the American people forget about all the red switch that's been happening now, or if they forget and they go back to normal, or if they remember it and they continue to vote red in these upcoming midterms in 2022. So we'll see how all of this ends up playing out. But CRT, one of the big issues nowadays, that basically says white people are inherently racist and inherently bad, which I would not want my son to be taught in school, that's how it works, because that just creates more division, creates more racism. Because now, you know, the African-American boy next to my most likely or mostly white son is not wanting to talk to him because he goes, oh, white boy bad. And now that just creates a new type of racism, frankly. And so hopefully we are able to figure out all of these struggles by the time we get there. But until then, that concludes your news for Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope to have you back for my next episode. And until then, thank you so much for listening.